Can you please tell me about the report you worked on titled Preparing for the Best and Worst of Times?
Sure. The New South Wales Department of Education particularly keen to stay relevant and up to date. The head of departments, Mark Scott, he used to run the ABC, and he is very keen for a broad debate to inform thinking of the department. There's quite some concerns in the community about artificial intelligence, and he commissioned our university. I'm at the University of Sydney, and we put together a team with researchers from the business school, the education faculty, the health and medical science faculties, as well as engineering, to look at what does the school system have to do now for somebody entering kindergarten to ensure they thrive and don't just survive when they leave school in 2030.
What are some of the things that the education sector can adopt to be prepared for the future?
The main thing we argue is that the education system in Australia is actually a very good quality. You hear lots of criticism of education. Yes, it can be improved. There's absolutely no doubt about that. But the underlying bones of it are sound. What we argue in particular is that many employers, the World Economic Forum being the leading exponent here, has said there's a need to revolutionise education and pursue what they call 21st century skills. These are things that they regard as important, things like problem solving, collaboration and creativity. That all sounds very attractive, but there are two problems with the current formulation. It's mainly pitched at trying to get the most flexible worker possible, and we think education should be about developing citizens and flourishing human beings, not just simply flexible labour. And secondly, the issues of problem solving and collaboration are not abilities that are learnt in the abstract. We argue at some length, drawing on insights from disciplines as diverse as cognitive psychology, labour economics and modern precepts of engineering, that if you want those general capabilities, you've really got to master a specific domain of practice. So it's very hard to be somebody who can solve a problem in anywhere, anytime. You've got to learn a specific area of expertise, and out of that, then get broader capacities to, you know, unpack a problem, mobilise the evidence you need to make sense of it, and then think in a disciplined way on how to respond to the issue before you. That you've got to do that anchored in one area.
Sure. So in terms of creating flourishing human beings and, I suppose, all-rounded sort of students, is it therefore a matter of teaching these strands of psychology or cognitive abilities, or is there a different way to go about it?
Well, we think in the you've got to think about it over the life course. So at primary school, the key issue is to give what we call learning dispositions to people. This is the ability to concentrate. It's you know, the ability to get on with people, the ability to have confidence in yourself, to ask questions. They're things that primary schools are, in many cases, pretty good at, you know. So we often hear criticism in primary schools, but more often than not, they do get that right. Now, they could do it better, there's no doubt about that, but there's good platform to build on there. When you get to the teen years and getting into high school, we think it's important that people master a specific area of expertise. Currently, most of the focus is on academic disciplines like, you know, maths, history, English and the like. But we think there's a need to really elevate vocational areas of expertise, things like care work or logistics work, engineering work or rural operations work. The vocational education side is quite underdone in our current education system, when we argue at length that we need to improve the quality of vocational education in schools. And that doesn't mean training people to simply be cogs in a machine at work, but giving them the deeper understandings they need to function well in a particular area of expertise. And even in the academic curriculum, we think there's a need for it to be tested and refined in the world of practice. You know, John Maynard Keynes, the very famous economist, made the quite powerful insight that there's often nothing more practical than a good theory. But you've got to learn how to use theory in that way as a guide to practice, and we think that's a bit underdone in the current system.
Sure. So then the report which you co-authored, that mentions AI, artificial intelligence, or AI for short. So where does this fit into all of what you've just told us?
Sure. Well, the whole front half of the report is, how is AI affecting the world in general and what challenges is it throwing up for education in particular? We actually say, when thinking about artificial intelligence, broader implications, you've got to break it down into three discrete areas. There's the overt impact, the covert impact, and what we call the amplifying impact. Now, the overt impact is the thing that's got most attention. This is, you know, automation taking away routine work and therefore causing unemployment. This has been an issue with automation since the emergence of, you know, market economies, basically. So, yes, AI is a threat there, but the problem is not so much the AI, but how the productivity gains generated by how they are distributed. So you don't make AI the villain. You actually look at how people are distributing profits that are generated by it. That's more the problem. On the covert side, this is something that we don't think has got the attention it deserves, so it's getting increasing attention post the US election and Cambridge Analytica. And this is, AI is changing the way in which we connect as humans. It's changing our connectivity, and it's changing the way in which decisions are made. And we think there's a need to equip students to be more critical in how they think about these changing ways of connection and changing ways decisions are made. And then finally, when it comes to the amplifying effect, if you look at the big issues of our time, you know, deepening inequality, climate change, the changing character of globalisation, AI can make those problems worse or challenges worse, or it can actually help us overcome the adverse side of those challenges. And once again, when we're thinking about AI, we've got to think about it in context, and it's, you know, it can be a force for good, and we need to identify that, but we also need to equip students with the ability to see where it's actually working in insidious ways to help other people make profits or to exploit them.
So dare I say, these fears surrounding AI and its ostensibly dystopian surroundings, do you think this is a generational thing that will just dissipate as younger generations are more familiar with the technology?
Not really. You know, it does give huge corporations and authoritarian governments in particular huge capabilities to monitor the population at large, and I think there is legitimate concern about that. But equally, the mechanisms of information and communication technology and artificial intelligence can provide the platform for new forms of collaboration and new forms of democracy. And, you know, as you would expect in a market society, it's mainly been used to help people turn a profit or to help governments control populations. But that's not inevitable, and I think if you've got a well-educated population, they could think about how to harness the potential in creative and positive ways. And but we've also got to be alert to the fact that it is actually can be used very negatively and in a very sectional way by powerful forces.
Professor John Buchanan, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.